This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the 3rd of March 2023. Hello, and welcome to the Winchester and District Newspaper, the Talking Newspaper. I'm your presenter, Roy Faithful. Your readers today are Jane Harding.
Hello.
Margaret Boyden.
Hello.
And Polly Cook.
Hello.
If you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings for the Winchester Talking Newspaper and the Winchester Talking Magazine, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please contact us on 01962 861 229. And this phone number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. If there's a problem with your Sovereign player, please try plugging it in and recharging it before sending it back as faulty. Now, the main headlines this week are: key decision looms for new city centre plans, new mayor elected for city, and leisure centre among buildings on award shortlist. Oh, may we have this story behind the first headline, please, Jane?
And that is: key decision looms for new city centre scheme. Winchester civic chiefs are set to announce their partner in a major revamp of the city centre. The council leader has pledged that the new scheme will avoid the disaster of the previous collapsed plan. The city council in 2021 relaunched its redevelopment of central Winchester, centred on Silver Hill, and has been seeking a developer. Councillors on the scrutiny committee discussed the development on Monday. The identity of the development partner will be revealed soon and an agreement signed to guide the scheme. The previous scheme fell apart in 2016 following a legal challenge by Councillor Kim Gottlieb. City Council leader Martin Todd said the Lib Dem-controlled authority had learned the lessons of that fiasco, highlighted by Claire Lloyd-Jones' report. Councillor Todd told the council meeting last Thursday that safeguards are in place. We start from a very different place from where we were in 2004, when the first Silver Hill started with developer Thornfield. We start from a position of ownership of most of the site, a clearly defined supplementary planning document which is deeply baked into the process and much more transparent governance. Councillor Todd said that as landowner, the council would have to approve a scheme even before it went to the planning committee. The site comprises land between Friars Gate and the Broadway. In recent years, the City Council has brought the bus station, Friars Gate Medical Centre and King's Walk. There will be a lot more control and a lot more democratic scrutiny and a lot more power as we own the land. That leaves us in a position where we are able to safeguard the city's interests. The scrutiny committee, chaired by Conservative Councillor Caroline Brooke, will feed back its opinions to the Cabinet Committee meeting on Monday, March the 6th. A report to the scrutiny committee said, "This report details the outcome of the comprehensive procurement process undertaken to find a development partner that shares the council's vision and values to deliver a vibrant, creative, mixed-use quarter in the heart of the city." At the scrutiny committee, Varian Lyons, head of the programme for CWR, that's the Central Winchester Regeneration, said, "We are looking to find the right partner to work with us to provide a great scheme." Councillor Stephen Godfrey asked about the risk involved. In the report, it said, "It is acknowledged that the risk profile of the CWR project is higher than moderate, but by proceeding with the project, the wider economic and social benefits identified in the development partner business case will be positive for the city and the wider district." And this is accompanied by a large photograph of Winchester Guildhall and a photograph of the Silver Hill area from above, which is the whole area opposite the Guildhall. All the little shops, a lot of them now closed, the bus station and the area behind that, which is part of the plan they hope to improve. And there's a photograph of Councillor Martin Todd with a large quote from him. There will be a lot more control and democratic scrutiny and a lot more power as we own the land. That leaves us in a position where we are able to safeguard the city's interests.
Margaret, let's have the second headline story, please.
New mayor elected for city. A new mayor of Winchester has been elected following the resignation of Councillor Derek Green. The deputy mayor, Angela Clear, was elected 3 months earlier than expected at the full council meeting last Thursday. But there was no discussion of the reason for Councillor Green stepping down, a situation described as absurd by former city councillor Patrick Davies. Councillor Clear, a Lib Dem, was nominated by Councillor Neil Cutler and seconded by Conservative group leader Councillor Caroline Horrell. There were no other nominations, so Councillor Clear is elected mayor for a second time. Councillor Patrick Cunningham was elected deputy mayor. He also has been mayor before. Councillor Green was not at the meeting and has declined to discuss the reasons for his departure. Ex-Councillor Patrick Davies spoke at the meeting about alleged excessive secrecy in the handling of complaints against a councillor. He asked council leader, Councillor Martin Todd, why was the meeting of the council's standards subcommittee on the 27th of January 2023 held in private to determine complaints about the conduct of a city councillor or a parish councillor? One can't tell from the council documents, despite the council's rules, paragraph 712, stating clearly that this should have been a public hearing. Councillor Davies was a long-serving Labour member and former leader of his group and has campaigned over alleged secrecy. Councillor Todd said the Standards Committee on January the 27th was not about Councillor Green or any city councillor, was about a legal report of an investigation into the conduct of Denmead Parish Council. He said details of the report would be placed in the public domain in due course. Councillor Todd said no council was beyond reproach and the investigation revealed that the parish council needed to change its ethos and that the status quo was not an option. He gave no further details about the issue in Denmead. He said a letter would be written to the chairman of the parish council, Paula Langford Smith, highlighting the need to produce and implement an action plan on the issues. Some of the behaviour highlighted by evidence was unacceptable, said Councillor Todd. Mr Davies revealed that there are 8 outstanding complaints about the conduct of city councillors dating back 2 years and 15 related to parish or town councillors. He said the council was continuing its parochial secrecy in these matters about serious complaints made about the conduct of city councillors, denying the public their right to know. Councillor Todd said there was a need for the appropriate balance between these matters that need to be dealt with in exempt session and those issues that can be discussed in public. He said council officers were having a fresh look at the issue. And there is a picture of the outgoing mayor smiling, dressed in his regalia. So he looks very happy about his departure.
Over to Polly for the third headline.
This is the Leisure Centre being among buildings on an award shortlist. 4 buildings in Hampshire have been shortlisted for the 2023 Royal Institute of British Architects, RIBA, South Awards. The Winchester Sport and Leisure Park on Bar End Road, which opened in May 2021, is on the shortlist. The building, which opened in 2021, was designed by LA Architects Limited with Stride Treglown. The Leisure Centre has had its share of critics, with many people disliking its box-like design. Ranging from a yoga centre to a theatre, a total of 16 buildings have been shortlisted overall. Also shortlisted are Black House Farm near Hinton Ampner, designed by Robin Lee Architecture, Hampshire Watermill in Whitchurch by Kana Ouellette Architects and Malcolm Fryer Architects, and Claywood House by Eyre Chamberlain Gaunt. RIBA South Jury Chair Stuart Etock, who is also Managing Director at ECE Architecture, said, The quality of projects in the South Region this year is as high as ever. Be it sensitive conservation or modern intervention, all the projects demonstrate skill, passion and determination, and have resulted in a range of beautiful new buildings and spaces that are truly unique to their environment. A regional jury will assess all shortlisted projects, and the winning projects will be announced later this spring. Regional award winners are considered for several RIBA special awards, including the RIBA Sustainability Award and the RIBA Building of the Year. Regional award winners will also be considered for a highly coveted RIBA National Award in recognition of their architectural excellence, the results of which will be announced in the summer. The shortlist for the RIBA Sterling Prize for the Best Building of the Year in the UK will then be drawn from the RIBA National Award-winning projects, and the Sterling Prize winner will be announced in October. And there are four photos of the four Hampshire shortlisted buildings.
Excellent. That ends our headline stories. Now we continue with death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, first person, Belgarum diary, and ending up with editorial comment. And we'll end with items of general news. And I'll start with the death notices. Bladen Biles, Sheila Diane Nay Bladen Biles, peacefully. Britain, Gary Kenneth Britton of Cheriton, peacefully after a long illness. Cogle, Nancy Cogle, peacefully at Shinfield View Care Home, aged 92. Goodridge, Angela Goodridge. Howard Jones, Robert Howard Jones, aged 76. Rhodes, Marjorie Rhodes, nay Brown, died unexpectedly but peacefully, aged 94. Sad, Joyce Sad, peacefully at home, aged 93. Schaefe, Ivy Beatrice Schaefe, formerly of South Wanston, at Ridgemead Care Home, Bishop's Waltham, aged 99. Short, peacefully in the Winchester Hospice, aged 84. Wallace, Beryl Amy Wallace, formerly of Wyke Mark, Dean Road, Winchester, peacefully aged 92 at Abbey View Care Home, Sherborne. And finally, Whitworth, Barbara Whitworth, aged 94, peacefully after a long illness. Now it's time for Christian Comment, read by Jane.
And Christian Comment this week is, rather unusually, Bono, rock singer and political activist. And it's by Nigel Hemming. I've just read Surrender, 40 Songs, One Story by Bono, the highly acclaimed lead singer of the rock band U2, who is also well known as an activist and philanthropist. I should probably declare that I've been a fan since the mid-1980s, but hearing his own story in his own words was a real treat on which I'm still reflecting. To be working with the same musicians for over 40 years and creating new material is impressive enough on its own, but Bono's achievements stretch way further than the music. He has spent an enormous amount of his extracurricular time advocating for human rights and social justice causes. Much of his campaigning is focused around the continent of Africa and has included the Drop the Debt campaign in 2000, as well as significant AIDS relief and the One campaign to fight global poverty, amongst many other initiatives. Fame is currency, he recognises, and I want to spend mine on the right stuff. Bono describes how securing the finance and support needed for these programmes required relentless hours meeting and persuading political leaders from all sides of the spectrum. You can disagree on everything, but still work together on one thing, he insists, if that one thing is important enough. Fighting global poverty was important enough to build relationships with those he mostly disagreed, often forcing himself to look beyond his own views although he admits it also drew uncomfortable reactions from his bandmates and other close friends. In the end, the countless hours paid off. The president's emergency plan for AIDS relief cost over $12 billion over the course of its lifetime and has since been credited with saving 17 million lives. According to President Bush, it never would have been made it out of Congress had Bono not been engaged. So, where does this motivation come from? There's no doubt that his life and work is informed by the radical Christian faith of his teens and twenties. He has spoken in various places of his love for the Bible, and in particular the Psalms of Lament, or the original blues, as he calls it, but it is the theme of justice on which he speaks most profoundly. At the Washington Prayer Breakfast in 2006, he quoted Isaiah 58:10 and said this, "Check Judaism, check Islam, check pretty much anyone. I mean, God may be well with us in our mansions on the hill. I hope so. But the one thing we can all agree, all faiths, all ideologies, is that God is with the vulnerable and the poor." And this, "Stop asking God to bless what you're doing. Get involved in what God is doing, because it's already blessed. God, as I say, is always with the poor. That's what God is doing. That's what he's calling us to do." Reading Bono's story, I was inspired by the extraordinary humility of a man who has achieved global fame and success, who has made such a difference on behalf of those who just couldn't stand up for themselves. And I thank God for him and those like him. And that was from Nigel Hemming, who is the senior pastor of Winchester Vineyard Church.
We'll continue with letters to the editor. If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836. The email address is news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, S0238AL. There are 9 letters this week, and Margaret's going to read the first one.
And this is from Elaine Ehrenfried, or Freed, about shortage of veg. Suddenly, vegetables we take for granted are being rationed on our supermarket shelves. Tomatoes, cucumbers, lettuce and other salads are no longer plentiful from Spain and other regions we buy from at this time of year, when in the UK this produce is off-season. Spain has recently suffered from Storm Filomena, the worst snowstorm in 50 years. Morocco has had unusually cold spells and exports of tomatoes have been suspended. Perhaps this is a prompt for us to eat the seasons and do without salad vegetables from other countries during the colder months. The air miles involved are also another incentive. Even better, in case the shortage continues, why not grow your own? This may not cover all your salad needs, but for the sake of a few seeds and a sunny windowsill, it is surely worth a try. A big bonus is the fund of growing and nurturing plants that you have grown for seed for your own use. The mental health benefits are well documented. Get a few pots and compost, choose your seeds, cucumber, courgettes and tomatoes are easy to grow, and keep watered in a sunny space. Check online for tips for planting on. I recommend the results. And this is from Elaine Ehrenfried, Riverside Gardens, Chandlesford.
Polly, for the next letter.
This letter is from Andrew M. Parker, headed Concerts Ending. With reference to the article in the issue of your paper of February the 9th and the relevant correspondence relating to the discontinuation of concerts in Winchester Cathedral on Saturday evenings, I wish to express the following views. I am a totally blind person who is a member of the Winchester and District Talking newspaper, which is now being recorded in the building housing the Hampshire Chronicle, and my father is one of the presenters of the Talking newspaper. My family has been resident in Winchester since June 1987, and I have been living independently as a tenant of A2 Dominion, formerly Winchester and District Housing Association, since July 1995. and for most of the years that I have lived here, either with my family or on my own, I have regularly attended concerts in the cathedral on Saturdays, and like other of your correspondents to the letter page, I am surprised and disappointed, not to say deeply concerned, for myself and other disabled people living in the district to learn of this potential development. It would appear that the relevant concert organisers have been contacted with a view of not giving concerts in the cathedral on Saturday evenings, even though the next concert by the Wainfleet Singers is scheduled to take place on the evening of Saturday, March the 18th. I feel that this situation, which if implemented, will be nothing short of a disaster, not only to the cathedral, but to that section of the public who attend the cathedral solely to enjoy good quality choral and orchestral concerts. Such a move would not only deprive the cathedral of a major source of income, and they need all the funds that they can raise in order to pay the services of the clergy who conduct services in the building, but also to pay for administration, to pay those who provide music on a regular basis, the boy and girl choristers, the lay clerks and organists, and to those who are employed to maintain this, the heart of the Diocese of Winchester as well as the City of Winchester. And this was from Andrew M. Parker, Chesil Street, Winchester.
And here we have Slava Ukraini from Councillor Rob Humby. With last week marking 1 year since the start of the conflict in Ukraine, I would ask you to help me convey a message of thanks and hope. To our local hosts who have provided a safe haven for those fleeing the war as part of the government's Homes for Ukraine scheme, without your generosity and kindness, many desperate people would be without sanctuary today. To our Ukrainian guests, we stand in solidarity with you and are proud to show our support for your nation in its ongoing struggle for peace and freedom. To the many partner organisations and our staff who have worked tirelessly over the past 12 months to support more than 1,450 families who have made Hampshire their home, your efforts and hard work deserve the highest praise. We are all deeply saddened by the fact that 12 months on, peace in Ukraine continues to appear elusive. We remain steadfast in our support of the people of Ukraine and ready to offer the hand of friendship to all fleeing conflict and war. And that was from Councillor Rob Humby, leader of Hampshire County Council, The Castle, Winchester.
And this is a letter from Sean Biddle, support for keeping road open. I would like to thank Mike Slynn, the chairman of the Kings Barton Residents Association, for his recent letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, February the 16th. It was interesting to read the results of his survey, confirming what I have heard on doorsteps and had felt anecdotally, that prospective buyers have not been adequately informed about the imminent closure of Andover Road North and the consequences for the residents of Kings Barton. A couple of recent surveys covering North Winchester area have demonstrated overwhelming local support for keeping the Andover Road North open for through traffic alongside the local thoroughfare that will be Winchester Avenue. I note, however, that regardless of public opinion, the leader of the City Council, Councillor Martin Todd, has his mind made up, as recently declared that keeping the Andover Road would be an act of insanity. Hampshire Chronicle, September the 26th, 2022. It seems that for some, representation of public opinion is not important, and democracy is just a word rather than a practice. Sean Biddle, Mortimer Close, Kingsworthy.
This is a letter from Betty Chadwick, headed Dirty Toilets. I have spoken to about 10 of our members about the public toilets in Winchester. Some of our members have the special key for the disabled toilets, which they are able to use in public disabled toilets and in pubs. Generally, they try to avoid using public toilets. They feel that they are dirty and dangerous. They also mention that the public toilets are often closed when they need to use them, especially in the evenings. The public toilets in St Morris's Passage and by the library, between library and theatre, were mentioned as being particularly bad, with dirty, smelly, wet floor. Abbey Gardens toilets sometimes closed and unable to get into the disabled toilets. They all agreed that they prefer to use cafes, shops and the Ark, where the toilets tend to be clean and safe, not McDonald's. There was one member who's told me that he doesn't like to use the public toilets as they are dangerous with needles in them and they're dirty. In addition to our members' comments, from an organisation perspective, we find it difficult to plan our summer day trips and picnics in parks locally as we need access to public toilets. In the past, we could rely on River Park Leisure Centre, and we have had a number of really successful picnics on River Park where we have been able to use the River Park toilets. This facility is now not available. This letter was from Betty Chadwick, CEO of Winchester Go LD.
And this letter is from Chris Corcoran and is headed Foreign Water. While grateful to Southern Water for my Avant bottled water, I was astonished to see from the label that it was from Turkey. How, I wonder, did this get here? By lorry, 1,500 miles? By sea, or, God forbid, by air? Have the company calculated the carbon footprint? The company has a net zero plan for being carbon neutral by 2030, but the transport of large quantities of bottled water from Turkey does not seem to be part of it. Could the director responsible for sustainability, Dr. Toby Willison from the company Blurb, please explain why they have not sourced this from the UK, what the carbon emissions were, and how these are to be offset? And that was from Chris Corcoran, Finch's Lane, Twyford.
And this is a letter from Roger Farrell, headed The AI Future. All journalists and editors are human. Oh no, they aren't. Have you heard of AI? Yes, but AI programs are written by humans. Okay, so do AI programs have human failings? Do you mean bias, prejudice, and a belief that everything on the internet is true? I suppose so, but perhaps newspapers and other media outlets will have different AI programs that reflect their political stance and select stories, sources, and spin accordingly. Do you mean like human journalists do? Well, yes. By the way, do you know where the Hampshire Chronicle stands on the political spectrum? I'm assuming right in the middle. Okay, one last thought. Can AI programmes be reviewed, censured, and even banned by the Press Council? Roger Farrell, Burriton Road, Hairstock.
This is a letter from Miles Fuchs, headed Phone Chargers. My mobile telephone charges are going up by 17.3% from April. The government has allowed O2 to raise prices using the February retail price index of 13.4%, plus an additional 3.9% as set out in your terms. Compare that to the offer made by the government to nurses of 3.5%, and the difficulties in the public sector of getting any settlement even approaching the current 10.1% inflation rate. Why the different yardsticks? Nurses and others are being forced to tighten their belts, whilst Virgin Media O2 were able to report on the 23rd of February, accelerating profitability. Their guidance anticipates a cash distribution to shareholders this year to be 1.8 to 2 billion pounds. Their total revenue last year was 10.4 billion pounds. Clearly, there is one set of rules for the corporate tycoons and shareholders and another one for ordinary, hard-working people. The inflation is not just driven by the war or the oil prices, it is accelerated by corporate greed and governmental actions. And this was from Miles Fuchs of Silwood Close, Winchester.
And Simon Theobalds writes about Shawford Down. Having just returned from 2 months away, I am shocked that the carnage that was Shawford Down in November has been embellished by uprooted trees, smashed branches and trunks, broken signs and vehicle tracks. My sadness is made the more keen after I walked what was a pleasant path and fell into the bole of a tree that had been torn down.
I hope Hampshire County Council and their countryside service are pleased with what Euroforest have accomplished. I just wish I knew what they're trying to achieve. All quiet on the Western Front? One sign suggests only ash trees were being taken down and that disruption would be minimal. I can't be the only Shawford resident that finds this rather far from reality. And that was from Simon Theobald, Shawford.
And that indeed was the last letter to the editor. Thank you very much to all of our contributors. This week's first person is by Khalid Aziz and is read by Margaret.
But people are fat and ugly. About a year ago, a member of our book club, A.W., suggested with his signature warped sense of humour that we read a collection of adult short stories by Roald Dahl, a writer known preeminently for his children's writing. We should have been wary. Months earlier, he had subjected us to Orestia by that well-known page-turner, Aeschylus. I remember from the distant memories of schoolboy Greek that Aeschylus was no Dan Brown or J.K. Rowling. On our return to book club a month later, the more scatological members didn't hold back the ordeal that they described how thrilled they had been to wade through this turgid Greek tragedy. Mind you, it had stood the test of time. In the 2020s, the tragedy was still there. We had to read it again. It was as dull today as it was 2,000 years ago. A.W. thought this was hilarious. If we had still been at school, he would have been duffed up. Anyway, back to Roald. According to some wags christened with this consonant, short for name, because his father couldn't spell Ronald. Why was the mischievous A.W. prescribing him for our delectation? The story collection was titled Switch Bitch, after the name of the lead story. They are intriguingly and, of course, being penned by Dahl, fabulously written tales. I won't spoil it for you in case you want to read it for yourself. Suffice to say, the Switch Bitch eponymous story involves a hapless individual who takes advantage of the generosity of a stranger with unforeseen consequences. There's a show-stopping twist at the end of the story. Where was the humour? The hapless central character of the piece was called Aziz. Oh, how we laughed, me mirthlessly, my fellow book club members with gusto. Those who know Dahl, either through his writings or via the highly popular TV series of the late 1970s, 80s, will know that not only did he employ fiendish plot twists, but he was no paragon of sensitivity. His observations were acerbic and merciless. By today's standards, he used every trope in the book and glorified in reinforcing stereotypes. Not quite an Englishman, a Scotsman, and an Irishman, but the next best thing. Like Rudyard Kipling, he had a white, Eurocentric view of the world. Now we Azizes are used to featuring in literature, usually unfavourable. Poor old Dr. Aziz faced terrible accusations in E.M. Forster's A Passage to India. If there's one thing the Brits hate more than an uppity Indian, it's an overqualified and accomplished Muslim. Pakistan hadn't yet been created to take over Legacy of Prejudice when the novel was written in 1924. So you might think I'm all in favour of the current revisionism being applied to the books of Dahl and others. If only for revenge on the likes of Forster and Kipling. I am not. To spare children the right to read about fat people is bonkers, as is referring to people as ugly. Carry on that way and you'd end up with no useful adjectives for storytellers to paint their word pictures. Face it. There are fat people. The softer corpulent is probably not in the most four-year-old's lexicon. People are ugly. Ban that word, and by extension you should ban the word beautiful, for fear of upsetting the ones who feel they are less so. I am both fat, and since my facial paralysis is ugly too, contenting myself with fading memories of times past. Writers must be free to express themselves. Context is all, and our history defines us. In the days of Forster and Kipling, the world was different. Dahl is more recent, but a product of both his environment, upbringing, and twisted, should I be writing non-straight or unconventional, mind. Sensitive readers should just get over it, or not read books written before 2020.
Polly is now going to read an alternative look at the news, because she's got Belgarum Diary.
The first article is headed The Use of Apostrophes. It's been a while since Belgarum discussed the use of apostrophes in local place names. Just a reminder about the seeming confusion in the use of apostrophes in denoting possession. The Ordnance Survey uses them in Bishops Waltham and King's Somburn, but not King's Worthy. The Hampshire Chronicle style guide reflects that. We also put the mark in Bishop Sutton. By a coincidence, the issue was raised at the council meeting last Thursday. Councillor Tony Bronk asked about the missing apostrophe in the new sign for St Mary's Terrace in Twyford. Villagers were told that all new street signs must omit the punctuation. Councillor Martin Todd, council leader, replied, "Clear and unambiguous street and place names are vital for postal and other delivery services, and also for the emergency services, and punctuation can make that more difficult, particularly with modern computer systems. And our default approach is to make signs that use the spelling recorded in the systems used by the emergency services, the National Land and Property Gazetteer. St Mary's Terrace in Twyford is a difficult case. Since Ordnance Survey have listed it at St Mary's, with an apostrophe, and Royal Mail and the Land and Property Gazetteer, and hence the emergency services, have St Mary's Terrace without an apostrophe. The next door primary school also has an apostrophe, adding to the confusion. In the case of St Mary's Terrace, I agree that the current name is confusing and not in line with residents' wishes. To that end, I have asked the officers to update the sign. And this is accompanied by a photo of St Mary's Terrace road sign without an apostrophe." The second article is headed "Veg Shortage, Good for Business." The shortage of tomatoes is widening to other fruit and vegetables affecting UK supermarkets and is expected to last a few weeks. But independent shops in Winchester appear to be bucking the trend. Bad weather and transport problems in Africa and Europe saw supermarkets limit their sale. Rebecca Smith, owner of Open House Deli in Middlebrook Street, said, "We aren't seeing shortages of goods. Nothing is fixed here. When we see problems, we just change or swap something out." Claudia Chinaska, director of Basil Leaf Deli in St George's Street, said, "There's not been a decrease in fruit and veg, instead an increase in customers." And this is accompanied by a photo of vegetables on sale in Winchester.
Now we'll skip back to Margaret, because she's got the editorial comment.
It's time to get involved again. Two major schemes that will affect Winchester for decades, if not centuries, are surfacing again. In this week's issue, we report on the resurrection of the Silver Hill scheme, now known officially as the Central Winchester Regeneration, CWR. The £100 million plus redevelopment of the land between Friarsgate and the Broadway. The City Council Cabinet meets on Monday to approve the appointment of the partner developer, the new equivalent of Thornfield and Henderson. The Council will fervently hope the outcome of the partnership will be more successful this time. The identity of the partner will be revealed later this month. Another scheme concerns the redevelopment of the River Park Leisure Centre by Southampton University. There is a public consultation at the School of Art this Saturday. Many local people have been unhappy at the way the City Council has disposed of the land to a private organisation. The Hampshire Chronicle urges the public to get involved with the consultations on both proposals. Only the lazy-minded cynic will say it is a waste of time. An individual voice can be ignored, but any public body will have to listen to a chorus of opinion. The public has the chance to discuss plans for the redevelopment of River Park Leisure Centre in Winchester. Southampton University is inviting people on Saturday to the start of the public consultation over the future of the centre and surrounding land. The City Council plans to transfer the leisure centre and part of the car park to the university, sparking opposition from nearby residents who have set up the Friends of River Park. The Friends launched an unsuccessful legal campaign to stop the transfer, arguing the land was given to the people of Winchester for recreational purposes in the early 20th century. Staff from Southampton University will be at the School of Art Cafe on Park Avenue on Saturday, March the 4th from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. University proposing to expand its School of Art campus wants to hear people's ideas. City Councillor John Tippett Cooper, who lives near the park, said, "It's really good to see the university now being able to start the conversation with the local community as to what they'd like to see happen with the dilapidated leisure centre building. There's been a lot of incorrect information out there about what the university have planned that has worried some people. For example, none of the green spaces of North Walls Park are affected by the plan, and the skate park is completely protected. I think one of the main things that people were concerned about was not having enough of a say. This is now their chance to help shape the new plan for this site."
Let's have a think about lighting up times. Friday the 3rd of March, it ends at 6:47 a.m. and it begins at 5:49 p.m. And again on Wednesday the 8th of March, it ends at 6:47 a.m. and begins at 5:49 p.m. Here's something local. A couple of weeks' time. On Saturday the 18th of March, 7:30 p.m. in the Winchester Cathedral, there's coronation music for a royal occasion. This is run by the Wainfleet Singers, but they'll also have the Bournemouth Symphony Orchestra and also a stellar lineup of soloists. The tickets are between £15 and £47, but if you want more information about this, please go to info@wainfleetsingers.org.uk. And we'll continue with further items of general news, and we'll start with one read by Polly.
This article is headed "Hospital Shop to Close Within Weeks." Staff and volunteers at a charitable shop at Winchester Hospital were devastated to hear it is closing in March. The Royal Voluntary Service RVS shop in the Butterfield reception in Royal Hampshire County Hospital is set to permanently close on Wednesday, March the 15th. The service has been involved with the hospital in Winchester for more than 40 years, with the shop opening in the 1980s. A worker at the RVS shop, who asked to remain anonymous, said that they were devastated when they heard the shop was closing. They said, "Before the pandemic, we had a network of over 30 volunteers who served in the shop and a trolley service that visited patients and staff in the wards. The volunteers were the jewels in our crown. Some of them made close friendships working together in the shop. Some of them had worked there for decades. I feel sad at the shop closure because it is a social hub in the hospital for staff, patients and visitors. There have been so many comments from everyone saying how sad they are that it's closing." Head of Retail Operations for RVS, Chris Gray, said the closure had been brought about by falling footfall. He said, "We have been pleased to see trading return to many of our cafes and shops, which are predominantly based in hospitals following the pandemic. There are, however, some sites where there is reduced footfall and customer spend, including our shop at Royal Hampshire County Hospital. This means we've had to make the difficult decision to close the shop. As a charity operating in a challenging environment, it's no longer viable to run this service. We are sad to see this service go and would like to thank all our staff and volunteers who have supported the shop over the years." A Hampshire Hospital NHS Foundation Trust spokesperson said that they were considering what to do with the space. They said, Hampshire Hospitals has been given notice by the Royal Voluntary Service that it is closing the shop at Winchester Hospital. Whilst this isn't a decision made by the Trust, we are currently exploring what we can do to support the staff and volunteers who have been a wonderful addition to the team, HHFT, and reviewing the best way forward for the space.
And here we have preparations to celebrate the King's coronation. Winchester is preparing to celebrate the coronation of King Charles III. Details of some of the events were outlined at the meeting of the full council. Conservative councillor Michael Kern said he hoped there would be a better show than for the Queen's Platinum Jubilee last year. Councillor Kern said, "With the coronation for King Charles III fast approaching, what plans are in place to celebrate this event of national importance in our historic city?" This after the notable absence of recognition for Her Late Majesty the Queen's Platinum Jubilee, in which many residents noticed there was no real effort, especially in our city centre, to mark the occasion. "I know cities across the country will be making great effort to make this occasion memorable for all, especially as the last time we witnessed a coronation was in 1953. As a former capital city, I'm sure we will agree it is important we play our part to honour our new king." Councillor Lucille Thompson, Cabinet Member for Business and Culture, replied, "For the Platinum Jubilee, the council awarded grants to enable a dozen community jubilee events to happen in village, town and city communities, spanning from Mitchell Dever in the north of the district to Wickham in the south. In addition, five parish councils received direct grants to support celebrations for their communities. Road closure applications were made free of charge, and the City Council processed 49 of these to allow our communities to come together. The City Council supplied the Queen's Green Canopy plaques to mark the planting of trees in 24 parishes, 48 City Council housing sites and 27 Council-maintained open spaces, along with a special Platinum Jubilee planting display at the Bar End roundabout. Events and celebrations taking place across the city were promoted via the Council's corporate and Visit Winchester websites and social media channels. Since last autumn, information about the King's coronation, along with opportunities such as grants and advice, including information on road closures and top tips for holding events, has been available and kept up to date on the Council's website." She said the Council will be dressing the city with Union flag-themed bunting and associated displays, including the Guildhall and a coronation-themed floral carpet on Bar End roundabout. Celebrations in Alresford, Denmead, Wickham, Bishopswarth and Whiteley are being supported through £800 grants to parish councils to help with their plans for events and street dressings. Winchester Cathedral is planning to offer a free event, including a live streaming of the coronation on a big screen. The council is working with Winchester BID and businesses to put on events. Grants have been made available to support community celebrations for the King's coronation. Five grants have been awarded under consideration to date. Road closures for street parties have been made available free of charge, and early applications have been encouraged. To date, 20 applications have been received.
Decades after tragedy, Junction still deadly. A former pub landlord of 25 years has said nothing has been done to improve the notoriously dangerous junction by his old pub. David Smith, 78, was the landlord of the Cart and Horses from 1967 to 1992, during which time one of his chefs was killed driving from the junction in Kingsworthy. The chef, Deb Butcher, was fatally injured when a car driving from Basingstoke to the Cart and Horses Junction crashed into his car. Mr. Smith recalls talking to his friend and colleague in the ambulance before he died later that day. 40 years on, people are still dying from crashes at the junction. Most recently, a woman died and a man was seriously injured after a collision between a Mazda and a van in October. The crash led to campaigns for a safer junction. Following a deputation in November, Councillor Jackie Porter said, "We have been campaigning for a safer junction here since 2014. The junction was changed, but has since created even more confusion, and we continue to seek a clearer and safer junction. Former pub landlord David, who now lives in Stoke Charity, said, "The junction is no different. It's always been dangerous. One of my chefs got killed there, in addition to several other incidents. There were loads of prangs in that period. I nearly got run over walking my dog. Even if you drive up there now, there's still a lack of signage. In New Zealand, for dangerous junctions like this, you get signs with a picture of a coffin on, and that's what we're here needs. Better signs or a roundabout. There's nothing if you're coming from the Basingstoke direction. Foliage has grown over the sign, and you wouldn't know there is a junction there. Meanwhile, if you're waiting at the junction to go right to Winnell, it's like straddling a railway line. If you live in the area, you're probably aware of the dangers, but there's nothing for strangers. The council has tried to sort the problem, and I don't know why I don't think they realise how serious it is. It's going to take more people to die for it to change. The council has gotten away with murder. We need people who know Kingsworthy to be making the decisions. The ex-landlord managed the 16th century pub for 25 years. The venue has since been taken over by Green King, with Mr. Smith describing it now as a glorified restaurant. And there's a picture of a grinning Mr. Smith behind the bar during his time at the Cart and Horses. Also an old picture of the Cart and Horses during David's time, and it really hasn't changed very much at all.
This article is headed Ukraine Vigil 1 year on from invasion. Residents came together to remember those who have lost their lives during the conflict in Ukraine, 1 year since the war began. People gathered for a vigil in Abbey Gardens on Friday, February the 24th, with lit candles, signs and Ukrainian flags. The event saw speeches and prayer readings read in both English and Ukrainian, and a performance of Ukraine is Not Yet Lost, the country's national anthem. A Winchester City of Sanctuary spokesperson said, "We held a vigil to mark a year since the invasion of Ukraine and to reflect and remember those who have lost their lives. Winchester and the wider community have opened their hearts and homes to Ukrainians and shown that Winchester is a place of sanctuary for all. We are grateful to hosts and the wider community who have welcomed and supported people seeking sanctuary and who continue to do so. We stand in solidarity with the people of Ukraine and with anyone seeking sanctuary." And there is a colourful photo of the vigil for Ukraine at Abbey Gardens.
And here we have City Tailor's anger after racist attacks. "A Winchester tailor says he could be forced to move if vandalism and racism continue," writes Adele Bouchard. "Winchester Tailoring in King's Walk was targeted by a group of vandals on Saturday, February the 25th, when they kicked in the back door, threw eggs over the front windows, shouted racist comments and dumped rubbish outside. Business owner Murat Negozal moved his business to Winchester 5 years ago as he believed it to be a safe and quiet place. However, now the tailor, who feels let down by the police, said he will have to move if the behaviour continues. Mr. Negozal, 40, said, "I'm extremely worried, doubting my own safety and not comfortable here. Because the police don't intervene, the offenders get much too much courage and attack more. Saturday was a really horrible time. They even jump-kicked the door while I was in there. It was an unprovoked incident, and these repairs are going to cost me time and money during the economic crisis too. The police just come and watch, and we do not accept that. This has been going on for the past year, and the police simply dismiss it as childish antisocial behaviour. But there are teenagers over the age of 16 and 17 involved. I used to have full confidence in the police, but when they arrived on Saturday, they weren't doing anything, not even removing the kids. I'm really frustrated with their response. Police need to take control of the area and take them in for questioning. Why are people making problems for me? It's completely unnecessary. I'm a law-abiding citizen trying to make a living. I've never seen behaviour like this before, and I'm questioning whether I should continue here.
T.O. Sanjar of Sunflowers Emporium next door to the tailors added, "It's so annoying. They are always causing a ruckus. It needs to stop and they need to be shaken up a bit. It's escalated in the last few months. It might have been the same group that set the bin on fire outside. We've not had any issues here specifically, so I don't know why they're targeting the poor tailors." Mr. Negazar recalled a group of 7 teenagers, which grew to be 15, targeting and shouting at the business at around 4:30 p.m. on Saturday. It wasn't until Monday, February the 27th morning, that the tailor realised the damage caused to the back door. Meanwhile, remnants of eggs are still stuck to the windows. The police attended the scene and have been contacted for comment. A police spokesman said, "We were called to Winchester Tailoring on King's Walk in Winchester just after 6 p.m. on Saturday the 25th of February to a report of criminal damage. It was reported a group of youths had kicked the door and thrown eggs at the building. Officers attended and the group dispersed. Members of the group were spoken to and details were taken. Anyone with information should call 101.
Landslip railway line is reopened. The railway hit by a huge landslip in Hampshire has reopened. The main line at Hook has been partially closed since the incident last month caused by heavy rainfall. The line was partially reopened on January the 23rd, but only a reduced service could run on the main line from Hampshire to London. But Network Rail says its staff have worked around the clock to repair the line, and the four lines fully reopened last Friday. Mark Killick, Network Rail route director, said, "I am pleased to say that all four lines have now reopened down in Hook and a full timetable has been reinstated. I'd like to say another huge thank you to customers and residents living alongside the railway for their patience while we carried out this huge repair, and our partners at SWR for working hand in hand with us to resolve the issue. Fixing the landslip at Hook has been an incredibly complex task, and there's a picture of the works going on the railway."
This is about pupils learning about food and farming. Pupils from a Winchester primary school teamed up with a local private school to gain insight into the world of food, farming and sustainability. Pupils from Stanmore Primary School headed to Winchester College on Wednesday, February the 8th, for a day of activities from sustainable food preparation with the college chefs to raising their pulses on the boat club ergometers. The children learned about sourcing locally sustainable foods to achieve a nutritious diet of essential macro and micronutrients whilst making bread and soup and pedalling on a smoothie bike. The Stanmore boys and girls learnt about the digestive system in an interactive session led by Hannah Fletcher, Head of Educational Partnerships at Winchester College, and listened to a presentation on food waste by sixth form pupil and Winchester Youth MP Dev Sharma. The positive impact of exercise on physical and mental health was explored in an energetic session with the boat club coaches. And there are photos of the children at Winchester College on the smoothie bike, on a training session with the combined cadet force, and on the boat club's ergometers.
Here we have husband and wife team add to their pub portfolio. An up-and-coming Hampshire pub company has taken on a new venue. Henderson Pub Company, which was founded in 2022 by directors Chris and Nicola Shootrups, apologies if I've pronounced that wrong, is taking over the Cricketers in Alsford. The venue has been closed while the new tenants move in. The husband and wife team hope to reopen the pub in Jacqueline's Lane on Easter weekend. Henderson Pub Company began the Hunter's Inn in Romsey and has since taken on 7 more businesses, including the Dolphin Inn in Hursley and the Olive Tree and Figurati in Southampton, with further plans to expand its portfolio this year. Mr. and Mrs. Shootrups believe their business shows how poor-performing hospitality businesses can be turned into customer-focused pillars of their communities. Managing Director Mr. Shootrups said, The Cricketers is an incredible business which has a huge amount of potential. Our plan is to invest in the property and offer a food-led, family-friendly, dog-friendly venue which is at the heart of the community which it serves. We already have an experienced team ready to start at the Cricketers who have a proven track record of creating amazing experiences for our customers. Henderson Pub Company promotes itself as using local suppliers where possible and ensuring that all food is home-cooked by their team of chefs across the group. Last year, the company donated more than £10,000 to local causes via its pubs in Hursley and Romsey, and so the team is looking forward to continuing its charitable effort at the Cricketers. Both Chris and Nicola have said coming to Alresford is the most exciting opportunity yet on their journey. And this is accompanied by a photo of a very cheerful-looking Chris Troops, sitting, obviously looking forward to taking over the Cricketers, and a lovely photograph of the Cricketers, which certainly looks as if it is an extremely happy and comfortable and good space for a new opening of the pub.
City Council to increase tax. Winchester Council taxpayers are set to pay £4 a year more for their services in a decision confirmed last Thursday. The City Council approved a budget to raise the Band D Council tax to £155.29 for the 23-24 financial year. However, residents are also having to pay a large increase to the County Council, which is upping its Band D charge by £69.33. The largest increase in its history, the meeting heard, amid warnings that it is facing bankruptcy. City Council leader Martin Todd said Winchester's was the third lowest increase in Hampshire. The coffers have been boosted by an unexpected £2 million extra from the government, which will be sent on a series of green measures. The Conservatives tabled a last-minute amendment to increase spending on schemes to tackle the climate and cost of living crisis, including a one-off council tax reduction of 8%. Senior Tory councillor Stephen Godfrey accused the Lib Dems of dither and delay. If we were running this council, we would be doing differently, investing in helping the more vulnerable. For the past 4 years, this council has been putting money into reserves in case something bad happens. £18 million is being kept for a rainy day. Now is the rainy day. Now is the time to help residents with the climate emergency and help residents with the cost of living crisis. The amendment was defeated by 24 votes to 11, with Councillor Jamie Scott siding with the Lib Dems, having switched from the Tories for a second time. Councillor Todd said, "I thought the Conservatives had learnt the lesson of incompetent financial management, of trustonomics. Conservative-controlled Hampshire County Council has today put council tax up by £69.33, the largest increase in their history, has a future funding gap of £132 million and will not be sustainable within 2 years." He said incompetent financial management by central government has driven up inflation and interest rates and cut money for services. Councillor Todd said the Tory amendment was irresponsible, empty bluster and empty political point scoring. Under the Lib Dems, the High Street was thriving with strong footfall. Unemployment was low and business was being supported, he said. The meeting also approved housing issues, including a 7% rise in rent for tenants and a £20.5 million new homes programme. It had support from the Conservatives, who called for greater speed in the carbon retrofitting programme. There have been 800 expressions of interest from tenants, but only 8 properties have been retrofitted in the last 3 years.
Retro. This is about a new Greggs store at a petrol station. Greggs has opened a store at a Winchester petrol station. The High Street Baker has opened a branch at Esso Station on Bar End Road, launching yesterday after being shut for 2 months due to a six-figure refurbishment. The increased offering will be welcomed by many in the Bar End and Highcliff area, which has long lost grocers-type shops. Pardeep Kumar San, manager of SO Winchester, said, "It was a very old store. This store hasn't had a level up in 40 years. We mostly have a lot of food development, especially Greggs. It's new for us. In the shop, we're bringing in more of a range like Rollover, Dunkin' Donuts, Costa, and a lot of other stuff. The revamp was close to 1 million. It's the first time we've spent that much money to re-level up the forecourt, shop side, the whole lot. The car wash systems allow you to pay at the pump, so you don't need to come inside at all. New car wash machines came to around £40,000 to £50,000. Mr. San said, "Electronic car charging points, EV points, are expected to be built in the next 5 to 6 months, and hours have not changed. It's still 24 hours. Every customer has left positive comments. Everybody likes the layout of the shop, but now it has a very modern style, the latest modern style."
Ukrainian musician plays emotional concert. A Ukrainian jazz accordionist who was separated from his family for nearly a year played his first concert in Winchester to raise money for his war-torn country. Volodymyr Vasilenko, 39, convinced the Ukrainian authorities to allow him to move in with his wife and six-year-old son after 10 months apart, on the basis that he would be fundraising to support his country. On Saturday, February 11th, the jazz accordionist did just that with a concert in the Salvation Army Hall in Parchment Street. The event attracted more than 120 people, helping to raise more than £1,000 for International Medical Corps UK. The father, who is just one of five people in Ukraine who plays jazz on the electric accordion, said, "I felt a deep understanding and positive emotional response to my music from the audience. There was a huge responsibility on my shoulders because it was not just a demonstration of my creative work, but an introduction to the British public of Ukrainian music, which I played in aid of my war-torn country." Vladimir and his wife Anna and son Myron moved out of their home in Parchment Street with host Stella Chernova 2 weeks ago to settle into their own rented accommodation above a restaurant in Winchester High Street. Local host Stella, 55, said, "I took an active interest in not just housing them, but in their lives too. Vladimir and his family are at the forefront for me, and I'm going to support them to be as successful as possible." And this is accompanied by three delightful photos. A lovely photo of Vladimir singing with, and they're in all the photos, they're dressed in their local costume. And then there's one photo of him playing his accordion with a lady next to him playing the cello. And then below, to my delight, there's a photo of him playing his accordion with a very young, she's just 10, Ukrainian girl who comes once a week to play the piano in my house because she was unable to bring hers with her.
New exhibition opens at the Arc. Winchester Arc has welcomed a new touring exhibition based on the concept of Sin. Sin is the first UK exhibition to explore the concept in art, bringing together 8 paintings from the National Gallery's collection alongside 2 special loans from contemporary artists Tracy Emin and Ron Mook. Speaking before the exhibition opened on February the 24th, National Gallery Chief Curator Christine Riding said that the themes present in the exhibition are universal, saying it doesn't really matter what society you come from, what age you come from, the concept of sin and salvation is pretty embedded into the idea of being a human being. So we're using the National Gallery's collection and some contemporary works of art to show the timeless nature of this idea of sin. Sin opened at the Arc on Friday, February the 24th, and runs until Sunday, May the 14th. The exhibition is accompanied by a programme of sin-themed events, talks and workshops.
This is about a councillor making a party switch for the third time. A Winchester City councillor has switched his allegiance to a rival party. Jamie Scott has represented St Luke's Ward in Stanmore since 2011, latterly for the Conservatives. He attended Thursday night's full council meeting and was seen sitting and voting with Liberal Democrat councillors. Councillor Scott confirmed the switch when emailed by the Chronicle during the meeting at the council chamber on Castle Avenue and said he would issue a statement later. The council website was altered that evening. Councillor Scott was first elected as a Conservative before moving over to the Liberal Democrats. Later, he returned to the Tories, but has now switched for a third time. Councillor Scott is Winchester born and bred and is one of the few councillors to live in a city council owned house. For many years, he was a community worker in Stanmore. His transfer now means that all 14 seats in the city area of the district are now held by the Lib Dems. Councillor Scott had been the only Tory on the Town Forum, a city council committee that acts as a kind of parish council. Councillor Scott said, "I've always worked hard for the benefit of my community, and I've seen how the Lib Dem team at the council are working to get things done that will make a real difference here. Even though we've been in different parties, they've never stopped working with me on issues in my ward and how we can help people and the community." Council leader Martin Todd said, "The things Jamie cares about, more affordable homes, building a strong community, supporting people with the cost of living and going greener, faster on the environment, are things that we care about too. Having Jamie in the team will mean that we can do even more for people across the St Luke ward community."
And here we have oil giant gives backing to budding firefighters. Hampshire Fire Service has received a donation of £30,000 from oil and gas giant ExxonMobil in Fawley for its cadets program. The Fire Cadets is a training scheme to give youngsters between the ages of 13 and 17 the opportunity to gain social, life, work and well-being skills and develop their confidence and personal skills. Meeting for 2 hours a week at local fire stations, they take part in firefighting drills and first aid training, getting to grips with real firefighting equipment. They also represent the fire cadets at community events and take part in fundraising activities. The cadets learn new skills like teamwork, communication and leadership, while improving their health, fitness and general well-being. Completing the program also gains them with a recognised BTEC qualification. The contribution from ExxonMobil will help to fund the purchase of uniforms as well as special protective clothing for drills and equipment for cadets and its volunteer instructors. It will also fund the ongoing programme delivery, qualifications, activities and events they are involved in. The programme runs for 40 weeks and there are opportunities for some to progress to become cadet crew and watch managers, where they mentor the younger cadets for a further 2 years. Karen Farr, the Fire and Rescue Services Manager for Young People, said, "On behalf of the service, I'd like to extend a huge thank you to ExxonMobil for this generous donation. This substantial investment in our Fire Cadets program will ensure we can continue to make a real difference to our lives of young people across our communities and the volunteers who support them." Rich Rastal, Health and Safety Manager at ExxonMobil Fawley, said, "The skills that the cadets will gain will set them up well for the future, so we are pleased to be able to help this important work with youngsters in our local communities." And includes a lovely photo of about 20 Hampshire Fire Cadets ranging in age from 13 to 17, so just those teenage years when they're standing very proud, upright in their uniforms and looking as if they're really part of a team who are learning excellent skills in life.
Zoo's last remaining red panda put down. Marwell Zoo has put down its only red panda following illness. The zoo in Caldon Commons said goodbye to the female red panda, Mai Mai, on Monday, February the 27th. Mai Mai, who was 9 years old, started to show signs of illness last week, so vets made the difficult decision to euthanize her after further signs of discomfort. The news followed the unrelated death of her male companion, Peter, in October, meaning there are no red pandas left at Marwell. A spokesman said, "They will both be very sadly missed by everyone at Marwood. We fully intend to bring their speeches back into the park as soon as possible after the current movement restrictions placed upon us as a result of the recent avian influenza outbreak are lifted. We are expecting a decision on this in coming weeks. Maimai arrived at Marwell in 2014 and was described as a firm favourite amongst guests young and old, thanks to her endearing looks and personality." And there's a lovely picture of her, which certainly shows her endearing looks and personality.
This is about a new bar and restaurant in the pipeline. A high-end restaurant is coming to Alsford, taking over a building which previously homed a Pizza Express. Glaister Inns, owners of the Three Horseshoes in nearby Byton, will turn 32 Broad Street into a high-end bar and restaurant called the Townhouse Alsford, with private hire dining and co-working space on the upper floors. It is not yet known when the new restaurant will open. The deal was handled by estate agent Savills on behalf of the landlord. Henry Glaister, director at Glaister Inns Limited, says, "We are excited to open up our second venue in my hometown of Alsford and build on the success we have created at the Three Horseshoes. We pride ourselves on delivering high quality food, drink and most importantly service, and we look forward to welcoming the residents of Alsford and visitors when we open. The character Grade 2 listed building, which was formerly let to Pizza Express, is arranged over a basement and three upper floors. The property will be split into separate trading areas, with the front of the building serving coffees, breakfasts, light lunches and brunch to eat in or take away. The remaining ground floor rooms will become a bar and restaurant. The rooms on the first floor will be transferred into private dining rooms and co-working space."
Here we have closure of High Street Bank, an absolute farce. A Bishop's Waltham resident has slammed a High Street Bank after it closed last month. Lloyd's, in the square, closed on January the 24th, leaving the town without a bank. Ian Lee Smith said the situation was an absolute farce. Mr. Lee Smith of Littleshaw Lane said, "I wrote to Lloyd's Bank to ask why they were doing this. Before, they said they wouldn't leave towns without a bank. The town's cash machines ran out of cash and not everyone is able to drive to the nearest bank." Mr. Lee Smith, 81, is the treasurer of the charity Bishops Waltham in Bloom and said that he had found it difficult to move the account online. He managed to get around 40 people and businesses to sign a petition against the bank's closure, which he included in his letter to the chief executive. In response, he was sent £30 in compensation. He said, "The whole organisation is a sham. Lots of pubs and even the local butcher just take card now. I was in the bank the day before it closed and there must have been a queue of at least 10 people. People are very aggrieved by this." Bishops Waltham Parish Council announced that an ATM was installed inside the Co-op in High Street on February the 9th. A parish council spokesman said, "The parish council has been greatly saddened at the loss of the two banks on the High Street in Bishops Waltham. We are aware that many of our residents don't use internet banking and most require cash for their daily needs. Our wide range of shops benefit from resident and visitor spending, and the availability of cash is key to keeping this economy thriving. Since August, the parish council has requested that the two town centre supermarkets consider installing ATMs. We're delighted to see now that the facility within the cooperative store, and thank the managers and the staff for their support of this community need. We hope Sainsbury's will offer likewise in due course. We are also thankful that our local spa can offer ATM services as an external unit and are very appreciative of the post office staff in providing a range of banking services to support our town." Previously, a Lloyds Bank spokesman said, "We see 78% of customers already using other branches in the local area, such as the Hedge End branch in Southampton. The nearby post office on the High Street offers personal and business customers everyday banking services, access to cash, paying in of cheques and more." And this is accompanied by a photograph of a very traditional Lloyds Bank building, standing on the corner of what is clearly a central part of the town of Bishop's Waltham.
Campaigners back motion. Campaigners for a movement tackling state pension inequality came out in force to show support for a motion being discussed in Hampshire County Council in Winchester. The council backed the motion to send a letter to the Secretary of State for Work and Pensions, urging a solution to problems caused by the 1995 State Pension Act, which saw the state pension age for women raised from 60 to 65. The letter would also call for fair compensation to be paid to the surviving spouses and families of affected beneficiaries. The motion was put forward by Councillors Malcolm Wade and is being seconded by Councillor Jonathan Glenn. Members of campaign group Women Against State Pension Inequality, WASPI, Solent Branch, travelled to the Hampshire County Council's chambers to show their support for the motion. And there is a picture of them standing outside the council chambers with a large banner saying Solent WASPI. No notice, no pension.
Get moving in March. Hampshire Hospices, Naomi House and Jack's Place have announced the launch of their new event, Move in March. This challenge encourages participants to take part for 30 minutes every day next month. The movement can be through any exercise and can be completed in one go or split throughout the day. There is a low fundraising target for Move in March of £93 to £1 for every minute of exercise, which can help the hospices continue to deliver their sibling support activities. The sibling support days are an opportunity for siblings of their service users to get together with others who share similar experiences. It gives the children a chance to exchange thoughts and feelings as well as have some fun. The event is free, and to get started, participants will receive an exercise tracker and pencil to keep track of their movement, as well as access to a dedicated Facebook group for support and encouragement from others who are taking part. Senior events fundraiser Charlotte Patrick said, "We are thrilled to launch Move in March, our new event that anyone can take part in. No matter how you choose to exercise for 30 minutes a day, know that you'll be making a difference to the children and young adults who use our services, as well as their families." Naomi House and Jack's Place provide expert hospice care to life-limited and life-threatened children and young adults who have complex care needs.
And the Crown is back in town. A Netflix series on the royal family recently packed away its set, only to come back to Winchester this week and do it all again. Actors, including a young Prince William lookalike, were filmed by Winchester College in the middle of last month. As the film crew was clearing away, a member from Maloney Location Services said they'd be returning this week to do it all again. It's not yet known whether more road and parking restrictions will be in place towards the end of February and beginning of March. Businesses such as P&G Wells were unaware of the future filming. A spokesman for Winchester City Council said, "To our knowledge, we were not aware of any further requests." Hampshire County Council has also been contacted for comment. Parking bay suspension requests should be made at least 5 days ahead of the suspension start date to allow signs to be put in place to notify users. Requests are granted at the discretion of Winchester City Council. However, if the production company Left Bank Pictures is filming inside Winchester College, road closures or parking suspension might not be necessary. A crew member said that they'd be back to do it all again in 2 weeks' time, which suggests filming will take place from Monday, February the 27th. A spokesperson for Netflix confirmed, "All filming will take place within the college grounds. There might be some parking suspensions in place right next to the college, but no road closures are anticipated." Winchester has been a popular spot for the Crown, with scenes previously filmed by Winchester College in September 2022, inside the cathedral in January this year, and in 2020 at the Guildhall, in 2018, and by the Wickham Arms in 2016. The school in College Street is used as a substitute for Eton College for the Netflix show. On Monday, February the 14th, Prince William actor Ed McVeigh was seen with a group of boys walking by the college with extras lining the pavements. The shots will form part of Series 6. The release date is yet to be announced, but is anticipated to be later this year. And this is accompanied by a photograph of Ed McVeigh as Prince William, had his hair appropriately styled to look like the old Prince William, and with his hands in his trouser pockets, as an ex-Eton College would be sure to do.
Initiative to help disabled deal with public transport. A Winchester Learning Disabilities charity has teamed up with a community rail group to help people with hidden disabilities. Hampshire Community Rail Partnership launched the project with the support of Winchester Go Learning Disabilities and funding from South Western Railway and Hampshire County Council. The partnership has produced a booklet of resources on how to travel with confidence, outlining tips on planning a journey, buying a ticket, how to ask for help. Many of the Winchester Go LD group members rely on public transport to get around, but find the chaos of train stations overwhelming. One member said, "I ended up in Manchester when I was meant to be going to college in Wales. It was scary and I was very late. I don't want to travel by train again." Another added, "I sometimes find it difficult getting to my sister's in Ashurst, as I forget to count the stops and I end up at Brockenhurst." To combat the difficulties, the group has practiced using the Help Point and the Passenger Assistance App, which the charity said has revolutionised the way its members can travel. CEO of Winchester Go LD, Betty Chadwick, said, "Our members are experts in learning disabilities through lived experience. The work we've done has really built our independence and our confidence in train travel. We are thrilled to be part of this project and we are keen to share our travel experiences and tips with peers." Winchester Go LD is delivering travel training to the wider Hampshire area and have planned trips with learning disability groups such as the Grow Project, James Place Eastleigh, Parkside Aldershot, Windward Day Services, Minster Trust and Reach Out Caring. The charity Feeding Back on What Makes Travel Difficult to SWR findings include that most people with learning difficulties prefer buying their ticket in person and manage well with routine. However, delayed trains and cancellations can be difficult to cope with, and people with learning difficulties often struggle to ask for help at these times. As well as training, the charity is creating informational videos that people can refer to at any time.
This is about a cycle group trialling a commuter shuttle, a cycle bus aimed at helping kids cycle safely into Winchester. Is trialling a commuter shuttle bus whilst pushing for lower speed limits. The Twyford and Colden Common cycle bus is encouraging commuters to join its route from Colden Common to Hopley Link on Wednesday the 8th of March to help people get into Winchester without driving. The shuttle service will run from Colden Common Recreation Ground at 8 a.m, 8:50 a.m. and 9:40 a.m. and at 4 p.m. and at 4:50 p.m. with stops and meeting points at Twyford and Hockley. Meanwhile, a group of Twyford residents, along with Ward Councillor Sue Cook, will be crossing the B3335 by the school, the Phoenix Pub and the post office to slow down the traffic and demonstrate why the speed limits need reducing. Currently, the speed limit changes 5 times in the 3.8 miles from Hockley Link to Fisher's Pond, with 60 miles per hour limit towards Hockley Link and 30 miles per hour limits in place through Twyford and Colden Common. The 60 miles per hour limit means Hampshire County Council cannot install a cycle path, so the group are petitioning for the speed limit to be lowered. Councillor Cook said, "We want to encourage as many people as possible to get on their bike and Hampshire County Council needs to understand what these high speeds are doing to our villages. The B3335 is supposed to be a relief road to relieve congestion on the motorway, but people are using it all the time. Twyford is not the village to come through. Cycle bus organiser Tony Higginson said, "It's important to demonstrate the cycling demand to Hampshire County councillors who have no understanding of active travel from their car seats. The only way to do this is to be on the road amongst cars and HGVs who use the B3335 as a way of cutting through residential areas to avoid routes more suitable for them, such as the motorway, until the County Council actually take notice. In Twyford, where the speed limit stands at 30 miles an hour, Councillor Cook was out with Hampshire Highways with a radar gun from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. on Monday the 27th of February. The team recorded more than 48 people travelling between 35 to 52 miles per hour in just 2 hours. Councillor Cook added, "The results were staggering and prove it is not safe for cyclists. I'm not suggesting a blanket 20 miles per hour speed limit, but through a village it is needed. To go straight to a 60 miles per hour zone is unacceptable. It needs to go down to 40 miles per hour." And there's a photo of Twyford and Colden Common cycle bus shuttle.
So we've got time for this week. Thank you to our editors for choosing the extracts, and thank you to our memory stick preparation, copying and dispatch teams. And of course, thanks to today's readers, Jane Harding.
Goodbye.
Margaret Boyden.
Goodbye.
And Polly Cook.
Goodbye.
And from me, Roy Faithful, thank you for listening. And I hope you stay safe, well and warm in the week ahead. When you're finished with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet, place the correct address label on the front of the wallet too, and return the wallet as soon as possible. Thank you and goodbye.